Lord Gaurachandra sings this Maha Mantra for the deliverance of all fallen souls. Hare Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Fill yourself with divine love by chanting loudly just once all these names of Krishna. O Nanda Nandana, O Yashoda Jivan, O Sri Radha Raman, dancing with your arms in the air, chant, O Sri Madhusudan, O Gopi Pranadhan, O Murali Badana, O Agani Shudana, O Putana Ghatana, O Brahma Vimohana. Lord Gaurachandra sings this Maha Mantra for the deliverance of all fallen souls. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. On behalf of all devotees, we offer our thankfulness to the participants of this auspicious drama revealing the pastimes of Lord Jagannath. Where are these deities from? Huh? It's in someone's home, these deities? Very beautiful. If we have nice kirtan, they may never want to leave our temple. Jagannath is noted for his mysterious pastimes in reciprocation with the love of his devotees. In order to actually see the form of the Lord, Brahma Samhita instructs us, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. We cannot see the spiritual, all blissful form of Krishna as long as our eyes are contaminated by material conception. It's not with the eyes of flesh that we can see Krishna. It is only when Krishna reveals himself by his own sweet will to his devotee. And when does Krishna reveal himself? When our eyes are decorated with love, with the cosmetic of love. When there is love in the heart, Krishna reveals himself even before our eyes. Yes, Krishna is none different than the deity. By his own sweet will, he incarnates in the form of our Trimurti. Why? To give us an opportunity to develop our love. Love is developed through service. Through selfless, devotional service under the auspicious guidance of Krishna's dear devotees. Sri Vigrahara Dana Nityanana, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, our very beloved exalted Acharya, taught us how the spiritual master teaches the disciple how to properly worship the deity with faith that the deity is a person and the Lord has appeared in this form to accept our worship. What is beyond the reach of material senses and even the material mind and intelligence is only approachable through faith. There is no other way. Faith is the greatest benediction, because through faith we can see that which is invisible. The limited can have experience of the unlimited. So through the words of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, we develop faith. That faith is so precious. It must be protected. It must be nourished. It is the only means by which we can connect to that which is beyond this world of death. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastra Koi, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. That by the association of a sadhu, the doors to the highest liberation are open. And how does that happen? Because in the association of sadhu, because they're only repeating the absolute truth as revealed through guru, sadhu, and shastra, and because their life is an example of those truths, in their association, we gain faith. That faith will give us the intelligence to discriminate between what is good and what is not good for our well-being. It will give us philosophical conviction. It will give us enthusiasm, and it can empower us to perform incredible acts beyond ourselves. That is the power of faith. We have an example here of Shamsundar Prabhu. He's very ecstatic when I speak about him. Actually, I think that Lord Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra appear just in reciprocation to Shamsundar Prabhu. Because for the first time in the Western world, Lord Jagannath was revealed to the people of the world to the extent of having regular ratayachas. And how was he revealed to the world? Through the hands of Shamsundar Prabhu. He carved the first Jagannaths to ever be worshipped in the West, outside of India. And how did he do it? He never heard of Jagannath, Baladev, or Subhadra growing up in Oregon of the United States. But because of just a few weeks of association with Srila Prabhupada, he had such faith that he was convinced that he was actually manifesting the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his hands by Prabhupada's order. Yes? He had that faith. And it was on the basis of that faith that Lord Jagannath appeared. He didn't appear simply because he was a good sculptor. Because we have seen in this drama, there were so many good sculptors, the best sculptors in the whole kingdom, and they could not carve Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. Not possible. The Lord does not appear in a form that will be worshipped by just material hands. Shamsundar Prabhu just found an old log that came in from the ocean, and on Prabhupada drew a picture of how it should be done, and he carved. And he had that faith, because Prabhupada is telling me the Supreme Lord is going to manifest from my hands. That is faith. And where did that faith come? From moments association with Srila Prabhupada. Think of this miracle. In the West, it's hard for you to understand, but I'll try to give you the experience. Nobody ever heard the word Krishna. The conception of God is usually an impersonal void, or at the best, a very, very stern, strict, ancient, old man with beard and white hair that's rewarding and punishing the people of the earth. You have seen even the more religious people of the West, the paintings of Leonardo and Michelangelo. God is very old. He is the great, great, great grandfather of the world. And Prabhupada comes and says, Prabhupada, that God is 15 years old forever. And he has a blue complexion, and he plays a flute, and he plays with cowherd boys and cowherd girls. Now, to the West, this is absolutely foreign to any conditionings. Yes? But not devotees, but common people immediately accepted that Krishna's God. He plays a flute. And then the idea of Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, that's even more extraordinary. But hundreds and thousands of people accepted this is God. Why? Because Prabhupada had such love, such compassion, such realization that when he spoke, he gave us faith. And in that faith, devotees could dedicate their lives and souls to worshiping Jagannath. It's one thing to just superficially say, yes, I believe that Krishna is the deity. I believe that this is Krishna. I believe that this is God. But there's another dimension. To actually give up everything, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, to give up your homes, to give up your wealth, to give up all your forms of entertainment and enjoyment, to give up all of those things, to dedicate your life exclusively to worshiping the deity of Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. That takes tremendous amount of faith that, yes, this is God. That is the power of sadhu. He instills within our heart faith. He instills within our heart not blind faith, but real faith. Because everyone in this world lives by faith. But everyone is living by faith in the propaganda of Maya. It is not seeing is believing, because 99% of what everybody believes, they've never seen. And that is a fact. How many things we believe in and how many things we've seen. We believe in those things that we have been conditioned to have faith in. So if somebody says that religion is just faith, everything is just faith. The question is, what faith? Faith in truth or faith in illusion? Faith in what God reveals through scripture and through the great acharyas, prophets, and saints throughout the ages? Or faith in what just money-making, greedy people want you to believe? That's really what our choice is. Mahat sevam dwaram ahurva muktais tamo dwaram yoshita sangi sangam. When we serve the great souls, the doors to liberation open, because we gain faith, we gain conviction, and through that faith we get by hearing from the great souls, we get spiritual power. Shamsundar Prabhu is the example. He was empowered to do such incredible things. Incredible things. Starting temples in San Francisco, one of the main cities of America. Starting center in London. Starting projects in India. Coming to India, never saw an Indian before besides Prabhupada in his whole life. He comes to Bombay, establishes Cross Maidan Pandal program, and there's 50,000 people coming every day. He didn't know a word of Hindi. He didn't know any politicians. He didn't know anything. But Prabhupada wanted a big program, so he did it. It was the largest such spiritual affair in Bombay, probably in history. Haribol, how did he do it? Because he was empowered by faith. But when we associate with materialistic people, then our faith is very much challenged. Very much challenged. So therefore, if within our lives, in family affairs and occupational affairs, it's unavoidable to associate with such people, we should give them all respect and compassion. But we have to saturate our hearts with strong faith so we can pass through the various duties of life without being adversely affected. Therefore, association is of such a precious, precious gift of God. We should never see it otherwise. Association with any devotee is a gift. If we find fault, if we criticize, we are cheating ourselves of that gift. Because we need each other desperately. And if anyone does not believe in this, just wait and see what happens. Maya will catch you. And before you know it, your bhakti is hidden, covered, and apparently lost. Prabhupada said, one who thinks that they can become God conscious without the association of devotees is insane. Strong word. But accurate. So, yes, such a precious gift is the association of devotees. But we must be very careful to guard against anartas, because they are attacking from without and they are also attacking from within. One such anartha, which is the propensity of most of us, is to act in such a way that causes pain to others. Cruelty. When we're envious of others, we're inclined to cause them pain. Even amongst devotees, this could happen. And there's another anartha. When you see someone suffering, when you don't extend yourself with compassion to give them Krishna conscious, that is another type of violence. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that there is a particular demon of Vrindavan that represents these qualities in our heart. Do you know who that demon is? Please say if you know. He was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura. What was his name? Very loudly, please. Everyone, congregationally chant his name. Very loudly.
Yes, Augustine.
Actually, you make great spiritual advancement chanting his name. Should I explain why? One day, Krishna decided to have early morning breakfast picnic in the pasture grounds of Vrindavan on bank of Yamuna. So on that day, Krishna rose very early. And to call all of his cowherd boyfriends, he blew his buffalo horn. Hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came with so many calves. In fact, the word used is asankhya. Asankhya means when you put one and there's 17 zeros after the one, that is an asankhya. That is the number of calves that came with the cowherd boys. If any of you mathematicians want to tell us exactly what that number is, you can inform us. No? So there were innumerable cows and calves. Now one may ask, how is it possible in the little part of Vrindavan, which is only 64 crosses, how is it that so many, millions and millions and unlimited calves can be there? But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and our acharyas explain that we cannot impose material limitations on Krishna, on devotional service, on the pastimes of Krishna, or in the holy Dham of Krishna. Because the Lord and His abode are of achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. The land of Vrindavan can make adjustments to accommodate anything in any way without any limitations. In fact, our acharyas tell us in Vrindavan, in one small section, we can fit billions of universes, each one 50 million miles in diameter. Try to explain that to your mathematics teacher. In a small section of Vrindavan, smaller than this room, you can fit billions of universes, 50 million miles each in diameter. Now for a devotee, doesn't even think twice about that. Just absolute faith, of course. Krishna can do anything. That is the power of faith. Achintya shakti. We know the common story of how Krishna puts a banyan tree within a little seed. From a banyan tree is a little seed this big. And from that little sea is actually a gigantic banyan tree. And that's just material nature. How much infinitely more inconceivably is the power of spiritual nature? Krishna is abhidhya and swarat. He is independent to do anything, any way. No restrictions. So yes, in this way, in Vrindavan, unlimited calves and hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys all playing their flutes and dancing and singing, all coming to meet with Krishna. Each cowherd boy had a lunch bag and a horn and a flute and a stick to control the calves. And each one was decorated by their parents with crystal necklaces and the gunja mala, and they had pearls and gold. But they were not satisfied with that. As soon as they came into the forest, immediately they began decorating each other with fruits and leaves, wild flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. Together, they played game after game, enjoying each other's company in the presence of Krishna. One boy would steal another boy's lunch bag, and then he'd give it to another boy, and the boy would be running after trying to get his lunch bag, because for cowherd boys, lunch bags are very important. For brahmacharis also, actually. Actually, at New Vrindavan, if you did anything in the old days, this was actually true in many parts of ISKCON, if you misbehaved, you would not get Mahaprasad that day. And that was such a serious penalty. It was devastating. It was, for a materialistic person, it was like getting 6 months in prison. No Mahaprasad. And there were other penalties that we will not discuss. So the cowherd boy would be running after his lunch bag, and they would be passing it to a distant place. Sometimes they'd hide it under a tree in an area of thorns where there were red ants, so the cowherd boy couldn't get it. And then somehow he'd try to get it and get it and get closer to it, and they'd take the lunch bag out and then throw it to another boy, and the boy would start crying, and all the other boys would be laughing and laughing. They'd be laughing. And the poor cowherd boy, he was crying. And then they'd smilingly give the lunch back to him. Krishna would go to a distant place to see a nice scene, the scenery of Vrindavan. He would enjoy looking. And one of the boys would say, "I will touch Krishna first." And another gopa would say, "No, I will touch Krishna first." And another would say, "No, I will touch Krishna first." And all these hundreds and thousands of boys would be charging at Krishna to touch him first. And everyone would touch Krishna first. Krishna's inconceivable potency. He can satisfy everyone's innermost desires. Each boy was differently engaged, all for the pleasure of Krishna. One would be playing his flute very sweetly. Another would be blowing his horn made out of the horn of the buffalo. Some of the boys were imitating the sound of the buzzing of the bees. Try again, please. And others were imitating the sweet singing voices of the cuckoos. Very good, very good. I am not qualified for that one. Other gopas would see bird flying overhead, and the shadow of the bird's flying body would be on the ground, and they would run on top of the shadow with their arms spread just like a bird, running, 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 pretending to be the birds. And others would imitate the very beautiful, graceful movements of the swan. Some of the other boys would sit motionless and silently next to the ducks, exactly imitating a duck. And others would dance perfectly imitating the dancing of the peacocks. Some of the boys, they would see baby monkeys in the branches of trees and pull their tails, and the monkeys would go. Louder, please. Very good. This challenge must certainly be coming from previous lives. I think you've definitely had a lot of practice in this. And then the little babies would screech and run to their mothers. And then other little cowherd boys, they wanted to go up into the branches of the tree, so they would grab the tails of the elderly monkeys and pull themselves up to the branches of the trees. And then when they get there, they'd sit next to the monkey and they would examine, they would study the expressions on monkey faces. And they would perfectly imitate all the different expressions of the monkeys. And then, imitating monkeys, they would jump branch to branch to branch on the trees of Braja. Other little boys would see some frogs. They'd hear the sound of the frogs and sing just like them. And they'd sit next to the frogs. And the frogs would be croaking. And then the little boys would see the frog jump in the lake, and all the boys would, exactly like the frog, jump into the lake. When they would see their reflection on the lake, they would laugh very happily, laughing at their own reflection on the lake, making fun of it. You know, who are you? Who are you? What are you doing? And then they would all go to a well, and they would shout names in the well. And when they would hear the echo, they would chastise the echo. Who are you? Who are you? Who do you think you are saying these things? And they would speak ill names to the echo. In this way, they were playing so nicely with Krishna. Herein, Sukadev Goswami describes the supreme glory of the Brijabasis, how they are so intimately playing with Krishna. As a friend, Sakyaras. That personality who is the source of the Brahman effulgence that is worshipped by the jnanis for liberation. That personality who is worshipped as the supreme personality of Godhead by the devotees with great reverence, with great sacrifices, with sadhana. The cowherd boys were simply playing with him throughout the entire day, laughing and singing. Even the greatest of the mystic yogis, through thousands and thousands of lifetimes of tapasya and penance, cannot taste even a single speck of dust from the lotus feet of Krishna. But the gopas of Vrindavan were freely playing. How is this possible? Sukadev Goswami explains, because they had acquired heaps and heaps and heaps of pious activities. But our beloved acharyas explain, they are not material pious activities. Krita punya refers to activities in devotional service that were so pleasing to Krishna that they literally controlled Krishna. One cannot achieve Krishna consciousness by by even millions and millions and millions of births of pious activities in this material plane of karma. Bhaktya, bhaktya twananyaya shakya aham evam vidurja. It is only by bhakti, it is only by devotional service that one could be seen as he is, that Krishna can be seen as he is. So this krita punya, these pious activities referred to here, are activities of devotional service, which conquer Krishna so much that he, by yogamaya potency, causes you to forget he's the supreme Brahman. And we love him and play with him as our most intimate, loving friend. This is the greatness of the Brijabasis. The Jnanis, the Karmis, and even the Dasya Bhaktas of Vaikuntha have no access to such playful pastimes with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna comes under the control of those devotees who love him, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. At that time, a demon of the name Aga entered into Vrindavan. He was sent by Kamsa specifically to kill Krishna. But he had his own determination as well, because Krishna had already killed his elder sister, Putana, and his elder brother, Bakasura. So he was thinking in his heart, with great cruelty, how to avenge Krishna. He decided that he would offer the dead bodies of Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan as sesame seeds and water in honor of his departed brother and sister to satisfy their souls. With this in mind, Agasura transformed his body into a massive, gigantic snake. This was his mystic power. He could not tolerate seeing the cowherd boys enjoying so much. They were laughing, they were singing, they were playing with Krishna. It was nothing but fun. Just like Shamsundar Prabhu likes to tell us how fun Krishna consciousness is. Actually, Krishna consciousness is simply joyful. Kevala Ananda Kanda. Chanting, dancing, feasting. Speaking about the all beautiful, all glorious leelas and teachings of Lord Krishna. Serving the Supreme Lord. It's a wonderful life. But as we become pure in heart, we actually realize the all-attractive love of Krishna. And then everything we do gives us ecstasy. Krishna gives us ecstasy. So the cowherd boys of Vrindavan, along with their calves, they were playing so happily. And Agasura was a demon. He was trying to find happiness in his life through manipulation of material nature, through material sense enjoyment, through somehow or other feeding more nourishment to his false ego. And actually, Agasura represents, in one sense, all materialistic people trying to be happy on this material plane. And when he saw the bliss of the cowherd boys, he was terribly envious. He couldn't tolerate it. So he decided to kill not only Krishna, but all those who were related Krishna. His determination was the Brijabasis will die. So he assumed the form of a gigantic python. His body was as wide as a mountain. It was 8 miles in length. He opened his mouth. The top of his mouth was literally touching the clouds, and the bottom of his mouth was on the ground. Now, I have seen our devotees sometimes when one little snake this big comes, they're Yes, do you remember at Ekachakra? A little snake came into our crowd and devotees were running. And that's normal because snakes can kill you. But one little snake that big, what would you think? What would be in your heart if you were face to face with Agasura? 8 miles long, mouth touching the clouds. The cowherd boys saw him, and some of them, they were very much afraid. They started to run away. Another cowherd boy said, No, why are you running away? Don't you see, this is just a scenic part of Vrindavan. Krishna wants us to be so happy that he has arranged the statue of this snake-looking creature for us to play in. And another boy said, well, that may be. But actually, is this dead or is this alive? What kind of animal is this? This appears to be a living, gigantic serpent who has come to devour us. And the other boys, they were thinking, yes, but Krishna, he will save us. Just like Bakasura devoured Krishna, and Krishna came out and destroyed him. So we have nothing to worry. Let us go inside. Let us explore. Let us go see what's inside this gigantic snake's mouth. One of the boys said, look. His upper lip is like a cloud reddened by the sun, and his lower lip looks like the shadow of that. Another boy said, look at his mouth. It's like his body is like a gigantic mountain, and his mouth is like a huge cave. And when you look inside, there's nothing but absolute pitch darkness. And his eyes, they are like blazing fire. And his teeth are like mountain peaks. And the red tongue is like a very wide highway, traffic way. Let us go inside and explore to see what's in. They were very curious. Krishna will save us. Now, our beloved acharyas explain why Agasura came at that time. Would any of you like to guess, or do any of you know why Agasura came at that time? Because the children were so immersed in playing, they never took their breakfast. And actually, they would have played for the rest of eternity. Something happened, had to happen to interrupt their playfulness so that they could eat breakfast. And even Krishna himself gets so completely absorbed in the leelas with his devotees that although he never forgets anything, he's the knower of everything at all times. By his own sweet will, he forgets. Just so that his leela is more enjoyable. At that time, he empowers his leela shakti, his yoga maya spiritual potency, to orchestrate various events. So the Leela Shakti of the Lord influenced the Paramatma in the heart of Agasura to come in the form of that gigantic snake right at that time when they were supposed to eat breakfast.
Hare Krishna.
So, Agasura was there, and his breath was like a wind. All of you are breathing, but nobody cares. But Agasura, a wind that was actually affecting hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys and unlimited calves. And they began to speculate, what is that smell, that horrible smell? In Krishna book, Prabhupada says, the cowherd boy said, it smells like fish. And others explain it smells like burnt dead corpses due to all the animals and other living entities that he devoured. So the little gopas, they considered this a very scenic spot, and they were very eager to see how Krishna would save them. So they, laughing and clapping, they all looked Krishna right in the face, smiling, and then they ran into Agasura's mouth. Haribo. Now Krishna was listening to them discussing this idea of going into Agasura's mouth, and he decided, I must stop them. They do not know. This is Agasura, one of the most powerful, devouring Rakshasa demons. I will stop them. But before he was able to stop them, they already ran in his mouth. We may ask this question. If Krishna is the controller of all controllers, why couldn't Krishna stop them? The reason is this. Because the boys, the cowherd boys, they had such a strong desire to do something wonderful, to see how Krishna would save them. That was their desire. And Krishna had his desire to stop them. And their desire was to run in so that Krishna would have to save them. Because their desire was so filled with love, it prevailed over Krishna's desire. This is the power of bhakti. Krishna is conquered by the love of his devotees. Similarly, by the power of Yashoda's love, she bound Krishna with ropes. How is that possible? God is never bound. Bhaktivatsal. The cowherd boys conquered Krishna. He was unable to stop them because their loving desire was so deeply to see Krishna perform a wonderful lila by saving them. All these hundreds and thousands of gopas and the calves were inside Aga's belly. They just ran deep into the darkness of his belly. Krishna, he was watching them. It appeared that they were like pieces of straw entering into a blazing fire. Krishna felt great compassion. And he was astonished. Krishna was actually astonished because he knew that these boys entering into the flaming mouth of Agasura, flaming means very dangerous, deathly. It was not due to their prarabdha karma that they were in that situation, because they had completely pure hearts. And someone with completely pure hearts is being directed by the Paramatma within their hearts, and the Paramatma never does anything against the wish of the source of the Paramatma, Krishna. So therefore, Krishna decided, this is all being done by my Lila Shakti. This is all being done to increase the reciprocation of our love. Krishna is bound by the prema of his devotee. Agasura did not close his mouth because he was waiting for the killer of his brother and sister to enter. So Krishna was thinking how to kill this demon without harming all my friends who are within his body? This is a good question, is it not? If you kill a demon, usually anything inside the demon's dead too. So Krishna decided, with this in mind, to enter into the mouth of Agasura personally, because he is Hari, one who takes away all dangers from the life of his devotees. After Krishna entered into Aga's mouth, the great python Asura closed his mouth tight shut. And you know what pythons do? Did any of you ever study pythons? Even little pythons, what to speak of 8-mile pythons, they have a power in their stomach where they literally crush whatever's in it. Their stomach expands and contracts, and when it contracts, it just crushes and kills anything in it. It's like we have a big python can eat a goat. Yes, even these little earthly pythons of Kali Yuga, they can eat a goat. And then the goat just... How does it... Something like that. Just crush it until just make it into liquid, just pulverize it like a juicer. And then they digest it. So when he started contracting his belly, Krishna began to expand himself. Agasura was contracting his belly to crush them to death, and Krishna expanded himself, and he was trying, and then Agasura tried to expand himself because he was suffocating. No air would go in and out. Krishna completely consumed all the space within his mouth. So Aga was in his mystic power, he was expanding himself, and Krishna expanded himself more and more and more and more and more until Agasura suffocated. His eyes were bursting and rolling in agony. And there was no place for his life air to escape due to the pressure of Krishna's body in his mouth. The life air burst from the Brahmarandra and the top of the head and entered into the sky in the form of a beautiful light. Meanwhile, Krishna saw that his gopas were actually laying there dead in an unconscious state with all the calves. So by a single glance upon them, they all came back to life. How is it that they were in such an unconscious state? Because in the complete darkness, they couldn't see Krishna. They felt intolerable separation from Krishna. And also that python's mouth, when he shut it, was so extremely hot that they couldn't survive. But Krishna brought them back to life. And then by his powers, Agasura's mouth opened. Now, it's very interesting that previously Krishna killed Putana. She was a 12-mile demon. But Krishna remained the size of a tiny little baby. And Trinavarta was a massive whirlwind. But Krishna remained the size of a little baby. And Sakatasura, he was a big demon in the form of a cart, and Krishna just kicked him in the size of a little baby. And Mother Yashoda, when she tried to bind Krishna with such tremendous length of rope, just hundreds and hundreds of ropes were tied together, it did not go around Krishna's waist, but Krishna didn't grow in size at all. He remained just a tiny little lovable baby. So why, in this case, did Krishna expand himself so big? To kill Agasura. The explanation is given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that in the Putana Lila, Sakatasura Lila, Trinavarta Lila, in the Lila of Damodar, Krishna was in the presence of his mother, his fathers, the gopas and the gopis. And he did not want to disturb their ras with him. Their ras with him is that they loved him as a little child, a baby. So he could perform such incredible opulent powers, but still appear to them as a helpless little child. So he did not want to disturb their mood of love for him. But in this case, Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj were nowhere around. And Balaram, this happened to happen on his birthday. So Rohini Devi, she kept him home to give cows away in charity to the Brahmins and to give him nice blessings. And the cowherd boys and the calves, they were all unconscious. So there was no one to see. So there was no rasas to interfere with. So he just grew and grew and grew to such a size, bigger than the sky. And then he came back to his original little size as a 5-year-old cowherd boy in his Poganda Lila and came out of the mouth along with his boyfriends. All the gopas and the calves were laughing and dancing and singing, smiling as they danced out of Agha's mouth. This is extraordinary, because Akasura was feared by even the devatas, the demigods, who believe that they're immortal because they drink nectar. They feared him. They were praying for his death. But yet the little cowherd boys fearlessly just ran right into his mouth. What is the difference between the demigods and the cowherd boys? The demigods have their selected famous weapons that they all hold. They have their carriers that they're famous for. They're great warriors. They have supernatural powers. And the gopas were just simple little 4 or 5-year-old children. The demigods were afraid, but the gopas were fearless. Why? Because they had taken complete shelter with complete faith in Krishna. Bajahure manasri nanda nandana apayat sharanada vindare. My dear mind, just worship Sri Nanda Nandana, because only then can you become fearless. When we take shelter of the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, we become fearless. That is the faith of the gopas. When Krishna came out of the mouth, the demigods were watching in great amazement. They saw this effulgent spiritual light that was the very soul or life force of Agha enter into the body of Krishna. Now, generally, you can never see the life force. The life force that comes out of a person's body is invisible to material eyes. We have seen people die, perhaps. Do you see a light come out of them? It actually comes out of them, but we don't see it because it is spiritual. However, in this case, by Krishna's own potency, he made that light visible because he wanted to show clearly to the demigods, to the devotees, and to the whole world how he is compassionate to even the demons. He wanted everyone to know that Agasura achieved liberation. He achieved Sarupya Mukti. which means achieving the same type of form as the Lord in Vaikuntha. He was not able to go to Goloka because he had not developed Braj Bhakti. He had not followed in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. But he was given the liberation of going to Vaikuntha to live as an eternal servant of Lord Narayan with the same type of spiritual body as Narayan himself, Sarupya Mukti. How is this possible? Because Krishna is all pure. Ordinarily, in order to achieve the destination of the spiritual world, we have to completely purify our lives by a lifelong effort of sadhana. By purifying our minds and our hearts of all sinful activities, all sinful attractions, by hearing the glories of the Lord, by serving the devotees of the Lord, by chanting the holy names of the Lord. But when the Supreme Lord personally incarnates as avatar in this world, he gives special mercy. That people who don't do any sadhana, just somebody who comes in touch with him, he sends them back to Godhead. That is the special privilege Krishna gives to those who he meets when he is in his form of an avatar in the world. But there is a more important understanding that we become purified by any connection to Krishna, by seeing his deity, by tasting his prasad, by coming in contact with his name, with his scriptures. Just like Srila Prabhupada explained, that if somebody even touches one of his books, they become so purified that they're guaranteed a human life. And most of these people, especially in the West, it's very doubtful if they're going to get human life any other way. Because Krishna is not different than that book. It's his words. Just touch it and you'll get purified. What to speak of Krishna entering into your mouth? Agasura was so fortunate. Krishna is not different than his name. Rupa Goswami explains, when I chant Krishna's name, Krishna dances on my tongue. He personally dances on my tongue, and I desire many, many, many tongues. That's how we become purified. When we see the beauty of Krishna through our eyes, Krishna comes into our heart. Yes? When we chant the holy name, Krishna enters into our tongue and into our heart when we concentrate on the name. Right now, as you're hearing Krishna's lila, Krishna is, to the extent you are submissive and attentive in your hearing, to that extent, Krishna is personally entering through your ears into your heart. And by that association, you'll become purified. Now, Agasura, he had Krishna directly right in his mouth in his full opulences. And because of the association of all the cowherd boys who were actually having fun, the cowherd boys were, for them, this was a excursion. It was like a playful yatra for them. They were playing in the mouth of Agasura. Agasura actually served them by giving them happiness, by helping them to remember Krishna in great ecstatic love. So because he pleased the cowherd boys, unintentionally, Krishna entered into his mouth, into his body, and in that state, his unfavorable attitude became favorable. His unfavorable desire to murder the cowherd boys actually was transformed, and he became very favorable and affectionate toward them. How did that happen? How did that transformation happen? Because he pleased the Lord's devotees. And therefore, when Krishna expanded himself, when he left his body in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, his life force entered into Krishna's body, and he was immediately promoted to Vaikuntha Dham. That is the power of the association of the Lord and his devotees. The demigods were watching. At the same time, Kamsa and his friends were watching. They were getting messages from spies. Krishna entered into Agha's mouth. The demigods were crying, "Alas, alas!" And Kamsa's friends were crying out, "Jai, jai!" They were jubilant. Now, Krishna heard the demigods and he heard Kamsa's, so he wanted to change everything around. So now, all the demons were saying, "Alas, alas, Akka's dead." And the demigods were jubilant. They were playing drums, big drums, not mridanga, like these big boom, boom, boom sound. What is the sound of big drum? Very loudly, very loudly. No, very loudly, please. Like something like that. Demigods were playing drums, boom, 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 but they were with rhythm. And the apsaras were dancing, and the gandharvas, they were showering flowers. More than Pushyabhishek. What, we get one ton of flowers? There were millions of tons of flowers falling from the sky. It was really a Pushyabhishek festival. As every demigod showering all scented parijata flowers from the heavenly planets on Krishna. It was a joyous occasion. And in all the different lokas of the universe, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, they were all having big, big festivals, Swargaloka. And Brahma just saw millions of festivals going on everywhere. What is happening? I want to see. So he came down and he understood Krishna had just killed the Agasura. Parikshit Maharaj describes how this took place when Krishna was in his Kumar Lila. He was only 5 years old. It was Kumar Lila. But it wasn't till 1 year later, when Krishna and the Gopas were in their Pauganda Lila, that it was described to the residents of Vrindavan. So Maharaj Parikshit was very much curious, inquiring from Sukadeva Goswami, such an incredible Lila, why did they not disclose it for 1 year? And Sukadeva Goswami revealed this mystery in the next chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. But meanwhile, in Vrindavan, after Akasura was killed, gradually his body dried up. Because you know the story, Brahma. Brahma heard about this killing of Akasura. He wanted to see who is this Krishna. And by that time, after killing Akasura, they took their breakfast.
Yes?
By this time, it was lunchtime. And they were sitting on bank of Yamuna. And Brahma's watching. And he's seeing hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys in circles around Krishna. And everyone's looking at Krishna. And Krishna's looking at them. And every cowherd boy is thinking, Krishna's looking at me. And the cowherd boys would taste something from the lunchbox that their mother had prepared for them. And if it tasted really, really good, they just spontaneously wanted to share it with Krishna. They'd say, "Krishna, this is so good, taste it." And Krishna, "Oh, yes, yes, let me taste it." And he was taking food from the mouth of his devotees. And he was taking food from his mouth and giving it to them. They were exchanging as equals. Now in Brahma Loka, that's not the way you worship the Absolute Supreme Lord. There's rules and regulations in deity worship. And it's like you know the story of Lord Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. In Puri, they have very spontaneous ways of worshiping the Lord, based on, not all of them are based on Shastra. They're based on tradition. And sometimes traditions in India, nobody really knows what the origin is. So Ramanujacharya was on a yatra, and he was establishing pure devotional service. He was teaching, you know, the importance of serving the Vaishnavas, and he was teaching the process of devotional service untinged by any type of material qualities. And at various temples, he was establishing proper standards. So he went to Puri, and he saw that they were doing sevas to Jagannath, that there was no basis according to Shastra. So he was correcting the pujaris. You have to do it according to the system. So that night he went to sleep, and Jagannath appeared to him in a dream and told him that they are worshiping me in pure love. I don't care about your rules and regulations. Do not disturb my devotees. Then he picked up Ramanujacharya in the dream and threw him. And he was sailing through the air. And then he woke up, and he was in Kurukshetra, hundreds of kilometers away. So yes, in Brahmaloka, things are done according to proper rules and regulations. So Brahma is saying this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, he has descended in this world, and he's just associating with little cowherd boys, and he's eating the food from their mouth? I want to test to see who he really is. So he stole the gopas and he stole the calves. That is subject for another class. But by the time that year came past, by that time Agasura's body was just a huge dried up snake skin. But because he died in Krishna consciousness, in the touch of Krishna, in total remembrance of Krishna, favorably, as Rupa Goswami says. Therefore, not only did he go back to Godhead, but his body became so sanctified, it became a favorite playground for the cowherd boys to play on. They would play in the cave, and they would dance on top of it and dance all around it. And this way, Agasura became very much an instrument for the enjoyable pastimes of Krishna and his devotees in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So Thakur Bhakti Vinod explains that Agasura represents the anartha, the unwanted quality within our hearts of envy toward others, which impels us to cause others anxiety, sometimes physical cruelty, sometimes emotional cruelty, sometimes verbal cruelty. We can also be cruel without even speaking anything, just by our disposition towards someone, by how we look at them or how we relate to them. And we hurt people's hearts. And especially when we inflict such cruelty on a devotee, it is actually a great offense against the chanting of the holy name. It is a major obstacle on the path of pure devotional service. Actually, a devotee understands it's not just to devotees, but we should not cause harm. We should not unnecessarily criticize any living being. We should be the well-wisher and respect all. amanina manadena, to respect all living entities and expect none in return. But when we expect respect for ourselves, when we have this false ego, then inevitably that creates envy toward others. It may be manifested, it may be unmanifested. We must subdue, we must curb this tendency within ourselves. When we criticize others, we are committing cruelty to them. When we act against others, we are committing cruelty to them. Or when even our disposition is in a very unfavorable mood toward others, we create pain or cruelty to them. So this propensity, which is within the heart of a conditioned soul, is a great obstacle. It must be removed. It must be removed by our proper conduct. Chaitanya Bhagavat, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told us, if you just follow two instructions, you will come back home to Godhead. You will see me. Chant the holy names incessantly and do not criticize others. Just do these two things and I will take you back to Godhead. Do not criticize others and incessantly chant the holy names. So Agasura, the demon within our heart that represents causing trouble to others. And also Thakur Bhaktivinoda explains, he represents another offensive mentality. The unwillingness to help others by giving them Krishna consciousness. By helping Srila Prabhupada and our beloved acharyas to spread the prime benediction for all humanity, the chanting of Krishna's name. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Baladev Subhadra Jagannath Swami Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi. Now let us celebrate the deliverance of Agasura, Aganishudana, by loudly chanting and dancing in praise of the Lord.